the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking today about an incident that took place in Washington, D.C., Georgetown University, a Jesuit-sponsored Catholic university that has kicked off campus evangelical student ministries. Now, what makes this a very interesting story is that this isn't just kind of a Catholic evangelical issue. It's really a Protestant chaplain on the Georgetown staff that got the evangelicals kicked off. It's really about a more conservative liberal issue, and it really gets down to whether a university like Georgetown believes in open access of ideas and the free exchange of ideas and is willing to welcome the presence of persons more conservative than the faculty on the campus. We're going to be talking today with a very special guest, Jay Bottom from First Things Magazine, who has written, I think, the most insightful response to what's going on at Georgetown. And I think you're going to want to talk about it, because I think it's one of those issues that kind of reveals for us what's going on when, in the name of free speech is shut down. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is news that is ricocheting all across the country, because one of the groups kicked off is the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, one of the most respected student ministry groups found anywhere. And the very fact that it's allowed on secular campuses and all the rest just makes it being kicked off of Georgetown's campus all the more unusual. Well, as you know, yesterday I mentioned that we're going to be talking about this imaginary Southern Baptist pastor written by Harvard sociobiologist E.O. Wilson. Professor Edward Wilson, now professor emeritus at Harvard University, is one of the most hardline secularists. He is a theoretician of what is known as sociobiology, the argument that says that human evolution not only explains the physical development of species, all forms of life, but even all behaviors. Now, what makes this very interesting is that the cover story in the current issue of the New Republic is an open letter from Dr. Wilson to what he says is an imagined Southern Baptist pastor. This is very, very interesting. Edward Wilson is someone who grew up as a Southern Baptist. He abandoned the faith, now identifies himself as an atheist, and he is very concerned about environmental issues, and in particular, the protection of life species, what he calls biodiversity. And he writes, again, in the New Republic, this open letter to an imagined Southern Baptist pastor, and this is what he says, and I quote, "It may seem far-fetched for a secular scientist to propose an alliance between science and religion, but the fact is that environmental activists cannot succeed without you and your followers as allies. The political process in American democracy, with rare exceptions, does not start at the top and work its way down to the voting masses. It proceeds in the opposite direction. Political leaders are compelled to calculate as precisely as they can what it will take to win the next election. The United States is an intensely religious nation. It is overwhelmingly Judeo-Christian, with a powerful undercurrent of evangelism. We secularists must face reality. The National Association of Evangelicals has 30 million members. The three leading American humanist organizations combined have at best a few thousand. Those who, for religious reasons, believe in saving the creation have the strength to do so through the political process. Acting alone, secular environmentalists do not. An alliance between science and religion, forged in an atmosphere of mutual respect, may be the only way to protect life on Earth, including, in the end, our own." End quote. That is one of the most amazingly candid statements I have ever read from someone on the intellectual left, someone that's a part of the establishment holding a chair at Harvard University and all the rest. He is an environmentalist. He is concerned with what he sees as environmental degradation and, in particular, the elimination of species by extinction. He says, however, there aren't enough of us, speaking of humanists, atheists, secularists, to get anything done in the political process. If we're going to get anything done, we've got to have numbers. We've got to have help. And he looks over and sees evangelical Christians and says, maybe in a process of mutual respect, we can get on board in terms of some mutual goals. I've written a response to Professor Wilson at my website at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com. I've been fascinated with him for a number of years. I followed his writings. This does come as a surprise to me. I think it's very interesting, if for nothing else, than the candid admission that the secularist left is so small. And even where there may be a ground for common cause, it is unable to get its point across without help, in this case, from evangelicals. Now, evangelical Christians must be, environmentalists. But we are environmentalists of a very different sort than what you find in the environmental movement. We do not see the earth, the cosmos, the creation, or the environment as an end in itself. We do not see it as a static, unguided, uncreated entity. We do not see human beings as merely one species among others. We cannot look at this the same way that a secular environmentalist would. But we do know that there is a biblical mandate that we will give an answer for how we have conducted ourselves as stewards of the creation. And we do have a stake in this. The glory of God is in the biodiversity. The glory of God is in the beauty of the earth. We have a responsibility, not only, however, to protect the earth, but also to use it. One of the problems in the current environmental conflict and controversy is that you have, on the one hand, persons who seem to treat human beings as the problem. That's the radical environmental movement. And others on the opposite extreme who seem to think that human beings have no responsibility at all. Somewhere between that is a sensible biblical theological position that understands we are to exercise stewardship. That stewardship means we are to use the world. We are to subdue it. We are entirely within our rights, as God has given it to us, to dam up a river for power, to tear down trees, cut them down in order to build houses, and to do many other things. We till the soil in order to have crops. But we are to leave the earth better than we found it. It is required of a steward, Jesus said, that he be found faithful. If we are stewards of the earth, we are to use it. As a matter of fact, it would be a slander against the glory of God if we refuse to use this good gift as he has given it to us by his intention. But if we abuse this gift, we also will be held accountable for that. You know, I find this whole thing very, very interesting. We're going to try to get Professor Wilson on this program in order to have the kind of mutual respect and common conversation that he's calling for in this article. I think that would be very interesting. But while this article is available online, I want you to be able to go see it at the New Republic, and you can go just to my website at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com, and go to the article that mentions E.O. Wilson, and you can follow the links and get right there. We will follow this story with you. Big story today in the Wall Street Journal. I find it very interesting. The title is, Do College Sports Really Strengthen Characters? By Gordon Marino of the University of Florida. He's going after a previous news story having to do with the fact that athletic departments are calling in specialists to try to teach morality to college athletes. And Mr. Marino is really raising the question as to whether that makes much sense given the total structure of college sports. Now, what I'm going to say here is undoubtedly going to be heard by some as an attack on college athletics. It really isn't. It's just an attack upon college athletics that pretends it's something other than a mechanism for showcasing talent in order to gain attention for the university, treating these athletes often as coddled professionals rather than as serious students. I do have a big problem with that. If you look at this news story, this analysis by Gordon Marino, he mentions the fact that these college students are brought in, these college athletes, not as students. He says this, athletic populations are me-centered. And he said there can be no denying that the amount of time and self-focus that sports today require can easily border on the narcissistic. Mr. Marino thinks that there are inherent limitations to how moral this context can be, given the expectations people have of college sports. With the college football season warming up and with other controversies in the news, from Duke to, you can just about name it, this is an issue that will eventually affect virtually every college campus and athletic program. But let's just remember that we do not have two sets of rules of morality, one for athletes and the other for non-athletes. They're just basic issues of right and wrong, and we're the people who are supposed to know that. And we had better watch ourselves lest we excuse it just because, following the logic of the athletic entire enterprise, we've got to win. I mentioned at my website today A quotation from Joy Davidman, the wife of C.S. Lewis, who in a commentary on the Ten Commandments said something I think is very important, talking about the difference between the old paganism and the new. This is what she said. The old pagans had to choose between a brilliant, jangling, irresponsible, chaotic universe alive with lawless powers and the serene and ordered universe of God and law. We modern pagans have to choose between that divine order and the gray, dead, irresponsible, chaotic universe of atheism. Listen to what she says here. And the tragedy is that we may make that choice without knowing it. Not by clear conviction, but by vague drifting. Not by denying God, but by losing interest in Him. Atheism by losing interest. I think that's a truly apt description of modern times and modern temptations. We'll be back to talk about IVF getting kicked off the Georgetown campus. This is Albert Mohler. Georgetown University in the nation's capital is one of the most respected private universities in America. It is well known. Of course, it's a fixture there in the community known as Georgetown in Washington, D.C. And it is a Catholic university by tradition, a Jesuit university. But it's in the news now not because of anything having to do directly with the Catholic Church, but the fact that they have kicked off, or perhaps to put it in their language, they have refused to continue covenants of agreement with some evangelical Christian groups, including the Chi Alpha Christian Fraternity and the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. Now, that just in itself is big news. And I have to say, as an evangelical looking at that, if it were a Catholic institution making this decision as a basis on the basis of its Catholic conviction and its responsibility as a Catholic institution, that's something that even though I may disagree with the decision, I would have to respect it as being a part of that institution's self-identity and mission. But I don't think that's what's really going on here. Georgetown is an institution that has been leaning leftward for a long time, and even the Washington Post in its story on this says that one of the big issues is that these evangelical groups were rather out of step with the direction of the university, and the university was more or less, you might say, embarrassed to have them on the campus. They raised the issue of proselytizing and evangelism, that's the word that's used here, and Kevin Offner, who oversees the InterVarsity program for graduate students at Georgetown, said they were called in and asked what they, quote, tell students behind closed doors, end quote. That just sounds very, very odd to me. And I think the best commentary on this, however, has been written by Dr. Joseph Bottom, who is himself a graduate of Georgetown University, holds a Ph.D. in philosophy from Boston College. He writes at First Things, a journal we cite often. Dr. Bottom, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for having me.
I really liked what you wrote because it just it fit what my gut instinct was about what's going on here. Just tell us, what is going on here?
Well, it's, you know, things get so complicated. Whenever college bureaucracies are involved, it's always complicated. But it boiled down essentially to this. Georgetown University, the Office of Campus Ministry, has a Protestant who oversees Protestant things for them. Her name is Constance Wheeler. She belongs to the African Methodist Church. And she wrote a letter to these evangelical groups, speaking as the director of Protestant activities on campus, saying that they would no longer have access to the campus, they were no longer officially recognized, and that they were to withdraw the word Georgetown from any place, any of their material, including their websites. The reasoning for it is a kind, you know, is one we in part have to guess about, but it is slightly odd that a Protestant minister working for Georgetown University cites the college's Catholic identity to get rid of another group of Protestants.
Well, and very clearly a more conservative group of Protestants.
Right. I mean, it does, in fact, finally boil down to this, that the mainline Protestants on campus, in the campus ministry's office, are embarrassed about the stands of these groups, particularly on abortion and same-sex marriage, and, decided to move them off as an embarrassment. Now, I'm with you on this, and I've said before that if Georgetown, my alma mater, I'm a Catholic, and if Georgetown, my alma mater, wanted to say, you know, we're going to reassert our Catholic identity, and we're not going to allow evangelization under our auspices by evangelical Protestant groups, I'd say it's a complete misunderstanding of the American religious situation, but I would understand it. But what we have here is a Protestant working for a school that proclaims at every moment its diversity and its openness to diversity, getting rid of other Protestants on the grounds, finally, that they are too conservative.
Your article published at the First Things website, I'm going to paraphrase here, why I really appreciate you coming on is because speaking as a Georgetown alum and as a Roman Catholic, you've got a credibility to speak to this that an evangelical wouldn't have, because I don't want this to sound just like an evangelical complaint. I think this is more interesting as a sign of what is really happening in higher education. And, if I paraphrase your article, it more or less comes down to this. It's a fine time now for Georgetown to decide it's a Catholic institution.
Right. No one believes that Georgetown University is deploying its Catholic identity in this situation. They're merely using that, this Protestant minister is using that as a cloak whereby she can get rid of those embarrassing evangelicals.
Can you tell us a little bit about what has been going on at Georgetown, just in terms of the listening audience? There would be people I think would be very interested, because one of the issues we face, I'm a Baptist, and one of the questions we've got to continually ask is there anything Baptist about Baptist institutions? And you know, in the Southern Baptist Convention, we've had major, major issues to deal with there.
Of course. Well, you know, the best book on this is by James Burchell. It's called The Dying of the Light. And it's an extraordinarily thick volume of case studies of American universities that began as mainline Protestant schools and one by one slipped away. And he traces it over and over again, from Duke to Harvard and small schools in between. And a pattern develops under which this happens. Now, one of the claims of his book is that Catholic colleges in America were tracing this pattern, but they're about 50 years behind. So that
as, it looks like you're catching up fast.
Right. As Christian as Harvard was 50 years ago, Georgetown is now. This is the kind of flagship of Catholic education in America, the oldest Jesuit school, the oldest Catholic school in America, founded in 1789. Georgetown has, you know, the crucifixes have been taken down. It has a lay president. There's a chapel on campus, but where, in fact, I was married. But the tone of the school is simply not Catholic anymore, and it's embarrassed by its Catholicism. Except a funny thing has happened, because the marketplace for education has gotten very, very tight. And one of the things that schools have is a kind of niche marketing. And we've reached this very odd situation at Georgetown and many, many, many other Catholic schools, particularly the Jesuit ones, who are all operating as though it were still 1975, and that, you know, liberalism needs to be advanced in the ways in which they thought that needed to be advanced in the 1970s. What you see in these schools is a faculty and an administration determined to turn them all into mini Harvards or mini University of Virginias, indistinguishable from any other Class A university in America, and an alumni association, a fundraising department, and a public relations department and admissions department determined to trumpet at every moment that the school is a Catholic one, because they need to have some kind of way to market themselves. So you have the business side of the colleges selling it as a Catholic school, and you have the actual administration and the teachers running as fast as they can from any Catholic identity.
And we have the very same thing in mainline Protestantism, and even increasingly among some of the more evangelical groups, where you have colleges and universities living on a legacy that no longer, and a reputation, I would add, that no longer really represents where they are. Dr. Joseph Bottom is editor of First Things, and he is himself a graduate of Georgetown University. You can go to firstthings.org and find that article and more. Dr. Bottom, thank you for joining us on the Albert Mohler program.
Thank you.
Folks, this is the kind of story that is an indication of what's going on in the larger culture. Dr. Bottom mentioned the work by Dr. Burchill on the decline of these colleges and universities, their revolt from Christian heritage and their founding. This is just one little reminder that that fuse is still burning. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. We've really got to understand what's going on here, because even as this news story about evangelical student groups being basically kicked off the as organizations from the Georgetown University campus in Washington, it's indicative of things happening elsewhere. As I said in the opening, it really is, in one sense, about free speech being limited in the name of free speech. And it just gets to the issue that, you know, on the ideological left, just about any position is tolerated except those that are intolerable, which happen to be more conservative positions. And when that comes to religious groups, in particular Christian groups, those who believe in the gospel and in evangelization and in conservative Christian conviction can find themselves pretty isolated on a campus like Georgetown. We had on Dr. Joseph Bottom of First Things, who was very good, a graduate of Georgetown and right there to watch over it. Was giving a good clarification when he made very clear it was a Protestant chaplain on staff at Georgetown of a more liberal denomination that at least wrote the letter evicting these evangelical organizations. We need to understand this better. Nathaniel Oakes is the team leader of InterVarsity Fellowship at Georgetown University. There couldn't be anyone better situated to tell us what's really going on here. Nathaniel, welcome to the program.
Dr. Mohler, thanks for having me.
Can you kind of clarify what's going on here? I can just tell you that what it looks like from here is that this is an intentional effort to identify evangelical groups and remove them from the campus.
That is correct. What we've actually seen happening is part of a bigger campus ministry effort. What the university tries to do is organize all the various religious groups, whether that's Protestant groups, it may be Muslim student groups. We actually have atheist groups on campus. What the campus ministry tries to do is just bring all those ministries under one big umbrella. Now, Protestant ministries has also been affected by that. What the Protestant ministries are doing, like you said, Reverend Wheeler, who is the Protestant ministry coordinator, is actually in charge of all the Protestant ministries. Now, they feel that we, as affiliated ministries such as InterVarsity, Chi Alpha, they feel that we as ministries are, you know, maybe taking students from their organized campus-directed ministry group and sort of absorbing them into our own, you know, external groups. And I think they see it as a, you know, a conflict of interest. We're more external. We have external support from university staff, groups like that. And I think that they just feel, you know, a little bit almost disenfranchised by us, by our external groups taking students. I know that that's one big issue at play.
You know, that's just very perplexing to me, though, Nathaniel, when you think about it, because, you know, these groups allow virtually anybody on campus to organize
right.
for political or ideological purposes. I mean, the other groups, I mean, there are independent Jewish and Catholic groups that are there. You know, this is singling out the evangelical groups, is it not?
That's correct. No, it very much is. And we feel very, very much, we feel very much abused by this. We feel like our voice has been taken away on campus. As evangelical groups, we, you know, even among what you would call evangelical groups, there's so much distinction among types of people, types of members that want to join, types of interests represented. You know, we practice our religious traditions in a very different way than other Protestant ministries. And so even among Protestant ministries, there's such diversity. You know, and then you look at that compared to the Muslim student groups. I mean, we honestly see ourselves on the same playing field that all the other groups who have been allowed on campus. You know, we feel like we're on the same level as them, you know, just in terms of having the same rights to practice our faith, having the same rights to express our religion, having our, you know, having the same rights just to meet with students. You know, we are no longer able to reserve rooms on campus as InterVarsity to meet with students, whereas the other groups are. So we feel, you know, very hurt by this decision.
Well, Nathaniel, we really thank you for coming on the program and telling us what is going on there. And the bottom line is very, very interesting to all of us who care about ministry to college students and who care about the culture of higher education, what's going on the campuses. That was Nathaniel Oakes, who's team leader of the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship at Georgetown University. And InterVarsity Fellowship is one of those very fine evangelical student ministries that has impacted thousands and thousands of lives. And the loss of that organization on that campus is, as I see it, a great tragedy. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to talk about what this means for the culture of higher education in America and why it is that evangelical groups, because they are evangelical, increasingly find themselves on the hot seat. We'll be right back. You know, this story is getting a lot of attention with evangelical student groups being kicked off the Georgetown University campus. Joseph M. Nipperberg, writing in the American Spectator, says this. This is a great line. He says, "For evangelicals, Georgetown University looks kind of like a domestic version of China, with officially recognized and monitored worship services conducted by employees of the state church and house churches operating secretively at the margins." Wow. That's a great, great word. Very, very clear example. So, Georgetown University, in the spirit of openness, has turned itself into the equivalent of communist China. There you have it. Phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Gary, listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, Dr. Mohler. I like your show very much. Just wanted to state, I want to know where the ACLU is now. In response to this outrageous act, you know, we have to be prepared for this as the election year gets closer, that the conservative aspect of our country is going to be under extreme attack, both on a religious note and a political note. So we have to mobilize. And I suppose that the ACLU could be utilized in this fashion for this particular reason, because if it was any other group, well, they'd be there for them.
Yeah, and almost any other group would call for them, wouldn't they? I mean, that is kind of the break glass and sound the alarm and call the ACLU. You make a very interesting point, Gary. I don't know where these Christian groups are going next, although especially in the case of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, you have a very large national organization that has had to fight these issues on secular campuses. I think the fact this is Georgetown as a private university may make it very difficult for this to be a litigation issue, because Georgetown is not a public university. It is private. But we all know, and this is implied in your suggestion, Gary, we all know that this isn't about the Catholic identity of Georgetown. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here, folks, and I'm going to tell you that having been on that campus and knowing something of what's going on there, I think the conservative values, if you're going to use that word, held by these groups, has something to do with it. The fact that on issues like abortion and same-sex marriage, as Dr. Bottom, you heard, said, that plays into this. There's an embarrassment at Georgetown University that they would have groups that would hold to such positions. But I don't think that's the big issue. I'll be honest. My gut instinct tells me the big issue is the fact that these evangelical groups were evangelizing. And, you know, if it was just over the social issues, I'd say, well, you know, we take our lumps on that and understand that, you know, that this is a hostile liberal university campus and this is the opposition you have to expect. But when it comes to Christian evangelism, this is where we have to throw ourselves on the line. And that is a completely different issue. And for that reason, I think we've got to give this prominence, we've got to give this attention, we have to track this story and see what happens, because if Georgetown gets away with this, I think you're going to see it all over the country. By the way, I've been handed a news story from the Duluth paper in Minnesota that says this. Christian groups say the University of Wisconsin campuses will not recognize them. Madison, Wisconsin is the byline here, storyline. Armed with recent federal court appeals court hearing, Christian student groups are challenging University of Wisconsin campuses' decisions to refuse to recognize them over their, quote, allegedly discriminatory membership requirements. That's the big thing. Charging these groups with being discriminatory in membership. Follow the logic here. Why are they discriminatory? Because they are Christian organizations who limit the membership to those who are Christians. Now, let me just suggest that it's very hard to be a Christian organization if you don't limit your membership to those who are Christians. Let me tell you why this is so perverse. Let's say that you have a pro-abortion group that wants to establish itself on campus. So you have a pro-abortion group. Their worldview is pro-abortion. They want to be activists. In fact, they want to evangelize for abortion rights. And so they get recognized as a student group, and they get the ability to sign up for a room, and they may even get some money from the Student Activities Fund, and they can organize and invite students. They can send stuff through the campus mail, and they're recognized. You bet they're recognized. And they limit the membership to those who believe in the promotion of abortion rights. I mean, that's the essence of who they are. Meanwhile, right down the hall is a group of evangelical Christians who want to organize as evangelical Christians. And just like the pro-abortion group organizes itself around the principle that membership is for those who are pro-abortion, the evangelical group organizes around its membership principle that it's for evangelical Christians. But then they're told you can't do that because that's discriminatory. It's not discriminatory for the pro-abortion group to say you have to be pro-abortion. Why? Because abortion is not one of the issues or the position of it that's covered by this kind of equal opportunity, non-discriminatory hate speech legislation. But religious identity is. In other words, no one would have the nerve to say to a pro-abortion organization on these campuses, you have to accept anti-abortionists in your membership, and furthermore, you have to accept them in your leadership. No one would dare do that, but they would dare go into an evangelical Christian organization and say, you can't limit your membership to evangelical Christians, and you can't limit your leadership to evangelical Christians. The leadership issue arose just in the last couple of years at Tufts University in Boston, and this stuff is going around all over the place. At the University of Wisconsin Superior, the student body refused to recognize the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. There we go again, because its leaders have to sign a statement that they have Christian beliefs. Now, let's just think about this for just a moment. What is the insane illogic of saying that in the name of fairness, we're going to require a Christian organization to accept people who don't accept Christianity as leaders? Now, you know, this is almost like the world turned upside down. There are times you think you have just come out of the rabbit hole in Alice's Wonderland, or you've just awakened in George Orwell's 1984, where things are just as backward in terms of logic and fairness as could be imagined. But this is what's happening on a lot of college campuses, and especially with the new academic year beginning and you have freshmen on so many of these campuses and with the whole academic enterprise getting cranked back up to full speed, we better know where we stand. And when you think about higher education in America, you will hear all the revelry and all the public relations about it being about openness, the free exchange of ideas. But on far too many campuses, it's only the free exchange of ideas on one side of the argument. Everybody has a voice, so long as you have the right voice. We'll be tracking this having to do with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and with other groups, because what's happened at Georgetown and the controversy over the University of Wisconsin campuses is something that's likely to show up just about everywhere, including your college, your university, your neighborhood. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. That was a very, very interesting discussion with our guests, especially related to what's happening at Georgetown University. But when you think about where we really stand, and when I mean we, I mean Christians. I don't mean just vis-a-vis a college campus. I mean in a larger culture. And how are persons thinking about these issues? You need to get the big picture and understand that we look increasingly dangerous. In a culture that is increasingly secular, those who hold to deep beliefs about the existence of God, and not only the existence of God, but a God who speaks in Scripture, look dangerous. I spoke about that today in chapel at Southern Seminary in Boyce College when I delivered a sermon on the first commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." You know, the very idea of monotheism is scary to some people. My blog today at albertmoeller.com, I have a section, an article on Gore Vidal, kind of the darling of the left-wing world of the literary circuit. Distant cousin to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, and one of those persons who's published all over the place in terms of the literary left. He writes this. He says, "Now to the root of the matter, the great unmentionable evil at the center of our culture is monotheism. From a barbaric Bronze Age text known as the Old Testament, three anti-human religions have evolved: Judaism, Christianity, Islam. They are sky god religions. They are literally patriarchal. God is the omnipotent father, hence the loathing of women for 2,000 years in those countries afflicted by the sky god and his earthly male delegates." He goes on and on and on and says, ultimately, totalitarianism is the only sort of politics that can truly serve the sky god's purpose. Any movement of a liberal nature endangers his authority and that of his delegates on earth. One god, one king, one pope, one master in the factory, one father leader in the family home. Now, later he says that he wants to declare, quote, an all-out war on the monotheists, end quote. Now, let's think about this for just a minute. An all-out war on the monotheists. And he does so in the name of tolerance and openness. You know, it just takes an incredible amount of audacity to declare war on people while claiming to be tolerant. And by the way, at the beginning of this program, I read to you from the letter by E.O. Wilson, an atheist scientist, to an imagined Southern Baptist pastor, in which he said, look, you add up all of these humanist organizations, and we have maybe a few thousand. Meanwhile, there are tens of millions of evangelical Christians in America. He acknowledges that. But Gore Vidal wants to declare war, all-out war, he says, on monotheists. Well, that's a lot of folks, Mr. Vidal. But you have helped us, and for that I thank you. You've helped us to understand what James Orr, a theologian of the last century, called the radical antagonism between belief and unbelief. It's good that we're reminded of that. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation with our guest, Mark Stein. Fascinating thinker. It'll be a fascinating conversation. You won't want to miss it.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.